I've been using the phrase Plan B. You know, I wrote a piece in the paper, in the Sun papers across the country over the weekend about, well, to talk about Plan B here. Plan A is about, geez, we don't know what's going on here. We've got this virus raging throughout really the world. Clamp down everything. Everybody stay home. Nobody move. Nobody do anything. Just go out to get groceries and medication while we figure out what this darn thing is. And I get it, and I'm with it. And I was one of the first people, you know, I saw Lori Goldstein saying there's this Globe and Mail report on right-wing media people downplaying the issue and so forth. I don't know what they're talking about. You know, in January, I said there's this thing in Wuhan. We have flights back and forth all the time. I don't trust the Chinese government. I think it's coming here. I think we need to be prepared. That was misinformation. That was fear-mongering. Racism! Even though the people who were actually speaking out loudest about it, the people I heard from, were persons of Chinese heritage in the Greater Toronto Area. So, I don't know, they were purveyors of anti-Chinese racism. Give me a break. It was all nonsense. And now, for some reason, governments, I guess, are suddenly happy with the fact that they're bringing in more and more measures that the Canadian Civil Liberties Association is saying are unfair and arbitrary. And I think some of them are. That father with the autistic child, he got him out into green space, open green space, because the kid just, you know, he has the energy, he's got to run around. $700 fine they're threatening him with. Come on. There's no need for that. There's nothing wrong with him being in that space. If you're driving around with your family, oh, okay, that guy's already there. I'm not going to go and get within 2 meters of him. Or maybe he will go, we've been here long enough. I will give away the field to this family. I'm going to leave now. We are adults. Let us conduct ourselves that way. If folks are having a contact rugby game right now and having a crowd watching them, by all means, find them. Of course. But this other stuff, it's getting a little silly. And we've got to start talking about finding a way to get out of all of this, to reopen society, to reopen it before companies just completely shut down. And some of them already are. We're already seeing reports of companies closing. In the latest report from StatsCan that came out this morning, we see the jobless rate has risen to 7.8 as 1 million Canadians have lost their jobs in March. That is awful news. 7.8 is not Great Depression territory yet, which, by the way, the International Monetary Fund just unveiled today that that is the terrain that we're heading towards, or at least the worst since then. That is unfortunate. But StatsCan also said there are 2 million Canadians who are still employed but had 0 hours of work recently. Okay, so they're technically employed, but they're not. And maybe since those numbers came out, the hammer has already fallen on them. Very tragic stuff. And there are also profound psychological, societal, personal, spiritual things that people are feeling right now, even if they don't have the virus, even if they're never going to have it. How do we deal with all of that? These are questions that Ray Pennings has been thinking about a lot. He is executive vice president at Cardis, a Canadian think tank based out of Ottawa. He joins us now to talk about the roadmap for an exit strategy. Ray, welcome back to the program. Always great to chat with you, and I know you're someone who puts a lot of thought into these big societal questions. And where are you at right now in terms of a potential exit strategy? What is that phrase meaning to you?
Well, thanks for having me, Anthony. I think one of the things that is preoccupying people is the fear of death. And, you know, as you just mentioned, people are, focused quite rightly on the concerns about the pandemic and social isolation, social distancing. And generally, people have taken that very seriously. It's when you go to a doctor and you have a diagnosis, you're concerned, you know, when he gives you a prescription, he also says, here are the side effects of the prescription. And I think one of the concerns I've had is, yes, we very seriously need to deal with the pandemic, and I support the various measures that have been taken. I don't think there is much choice that we had. But we also need to do so very conscious of the metrics of the side effects of the prescription. The daily preoccupation by deaths by COVID may be something that's accurate today, but let us not fool ourselves that the social distancing, the depression that's going to come. You know, you just mentioned the fact that people are working, are being paid but not working. There's lots of studies out there that talk about the non-economic impacts of work and how important that is to our identity and fulfillment and all the rest. I guess the bottom line is that I'm concerned that addictions, bankruptcy, depression, suicides, family breakdown, all of these are going to increase as a result of the prescription, and those two are deaths by COVID indirectly. And I'm simply saying we need to take a longer-term strategy that factors all of this, not in a competitive equation. We shouldn't be choosing between health and the economy. And I would add a whole bunch of others. I think, you know, arts, I think religion, I think the lots of things that people do is fundamental to who we are as human beings, and it all needs to be factored in and not just reduced to we're afraid of dying because of a pandemic.
Yeah, very wise words, Ray. And, you know, there's got to be a risk assessment and trade-offs and so forth. But to your point, it doesn't have to be, oh, okay, well, people in long-term care facilities are dying. Okay, well, let them die anyway. No, not at all. I mean, let's talk about rallying around those communities, those individuals, and giving their extra response. And, you know, I would love for testing to show that some of us actually had it or we've developed immunity. So then, you know, we are not going to spread it to people and we're probably not going to get it seriously ourselves again. So we can go out and about and we can return. Because you make a great point about the arts and spirituality. I've seen people telling these cool stories about, oh, I went to mass online the other day, or I watched a concert. I saw Elton John and some of his friends. They did a televised concert and so forth. Who are we kidding? There are very communal, celebratory things that happen when one goes to their religious facility, or when goes to a concert and just celebrates life with 10,000 other people. I mean, we just can't sit in a box and have screen time with each other. I don't think that's what the human being wants out of those.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a religious person. I've been participating and even have led some online services. Staring at a camera instead of a congregation is not the same thing. And, you know, being in my home, looking at the screen is not the same thing as worshiping. Let's, you know, even for those who are non-religious, let's not lose sight of the, you know, we talk about those in nursing homes being particularly vulnerable by all means. Let's not also lose the sight of the value of a grandmother hugging a grandchild. And looking, you know, we can't write off a segment of the population because they're not working and they're not economically productive and all the rest. So, you know, let's be indifferent. I would argue that as we look at the response, the importance of not giving COVID is not just so that we can breathe; it's so that we can be alive and live. And I think that. And lest I be misunderstood, I'm not advocating for a moment that we stop the social isolation immediately and that we be stupid in terms of how we go forward on this. I am simply saying the daily metrics, the daily numbers that we see are only telling part of the story. And when I go to the doctor and he gives me a prescription, I have to weigh both the side effects of the prescription as well as the disease that is there. And I need to take that into account. And I think that those are the questions that, we need to be thinking about and talking about with a longer term strategy in mind in terms of how do we get out of it.
We're joined now by Ray Pennings, Executive Vice President at the think tank Cardis. Ray, you're saying stuff that I think resonates with a lot of people. They're kind of feeling it now, these sort of societal, psychological, spiritual, all those phrases apply to the kind of malaise that is set upon a lot of people. Government right now, I think, is focused on triage in terms of let's stop people from dying, let's stop businesses from collapsing. I get all of that. How do we push this conversation forward in a responsible way? How do we, you know, remind the public servants who do work for us and answer to us that we want to head in this direction, and to your point, with all the caveats about doing it responsibly?
Yeah, I think, and I wrote a piece that was published in terms of five very practical steps that could be taken. I think I used the military analogy rather than the hospital one, and basically said no good general goes into a war without an exit strategy. We need to talk, you know, there's a real danger in putting the mission accomplished sign up before it's truly accomplished. On the other hand, I'm not sure right now we know what mission accomplished means. And I suggested five things. First of all, let's actually change the metrics in terms of death by COVID. Every day we're focused just on a narrow number. I think we need a broader number that takes into account The capacity, you know, the real risk, so our capacity in terms of our the beds to deal with those who to have it and those who need ICU and that treatment, let's really focus on making sure we have the capacity and our health system is not overdone. And certainly in the last 2 weeks, there has been an improvement in that and a more more refined set of metrics. I think that this isn't going to be an on-off switch. There is going to be a phased implementation, and we need to start thinking about what those steps are and preparing people for that. Because if you don't prepare people with an understanding of why you're going to do it, there's going to be a lot of pent-up frustration. And, you know, you mentioned some of the silliness in terms of the application of, you know, finding people in the park or doing something that when they are respecting social distancing rules and that. We need to create a common sense approach to how we implement that. Let's not be blind about the fact that one of the healthy things is we're going to have a renewed broad awareness of cleanliness of various social practices. I suspect the practices of handshaking and some of the physical contacts that are just culturally normative in our society are going to change. And then we need to take a look at, you know, recognizing this is not health versus economics. A preoccupation with just the economic side that does not look at all the other parts of society doesn't really understand who we are as human beings and is destined to fail. This needs to be more than a health economics sort of thing where most of the conversation is there. All areas of life are important. And I actually think one of the very healthy side effects of all of this is it's causing us to think about bigger questions. And hopefully this will spawn a deeper conversation about the purpose, meaning of life and what we owe to each other and what it means to live in society. And the point is, these are not pronouncements. These are conversations that have to be had. And you can't suddenly decide on the 15th of May or the 15th of July that, okay, we're now ready to open up. This actually is a conversation that needs to start now. And we can't just be looking at negatively afraid being preventing deaths. We actually need to look at what does it mean to engage life.
Wise words, profound words indeed. Ray Pennings, thank you for joining us with those thoughts and those reflections on the COVID-19 potential exit strategy. Ray Pennings is Executive Vice President at the think tank Cardis. And I think Ray is really onto something about reflecting on those big questions. We know we've done it. We've all done it. You know, I'll tell you, I have had a number of times now in the past couple of weeks where one of the children has said, "Daddy, can you read this book to me?" And